Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Post-show recaps theater presents Movies. So many movies as reviewed for you by your friends at Post-show recaps, featuring Grace and Ariel and their incredible movie takes. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back. We are at the movies. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, Ariel. Ariel, how you doing?
I'm good. I just went skinny dipping in a lake and nobody was there and everything was fine. So I think I feel good about it.
That's great. Nobody was there?
I didn't see anyone. No animals. No animals. No scary music.
I almost spoiled the movie immediately. You made a joke and then I was going to spoil it. We're talking about X. A slasher horror film, bit of an indie film. It's an indie film.
Yeah,
it's an indie
film. It definitely feels like one. It has that feel.
Yeah. Directed by Ty West or T West. Apologies, whichever one. It's fun little horror movie. So we're gonna get into it. But we are joined today by a guest. We've invited them to stay at our cabin on this farm that we've rented out. We're here with Todd the librarian. Hi, Todd.
Hey, I'm very happy to be part of the Foxy Car Wreck that is your movie review podcast. So,
yeah, Todd, you're a big movie buff. We've been meaning to get you on the podcast. There's two ways I know if somebody is a movie buff, which is one, they have talked about it in the Discord before I have seen it, or they often have a Letterboxd review of the movie, a la Ariel, before I've reviewed the movie. You are one of those people for me as well, Todd. So we're excited to have you on.
Excited to be here. Excited to talk about a horror movie. Horror is like my favorite genre, basically. I watch pretty much anything and everything, but horror is that I'm the weird person who actually feels relaxed watching horror movies. Whenever I'm stressed out, I watch a horror movie and it just kind of like takes my stress away. So yeah.
I feel like horror is a huge blind spot for me as a movie. What's the one horror movie I should definitely have watched? And I bet I haven't watched it. But what should I have watched?
My all-time favorite horror movie is John Carpenter's The Thing.
Okay, I've never seen it. See? So I've never seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is written. This one is very inspired by Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The trailers for X, I'm like, okay, Ty West is going for Texas Chainsaw vibes. Very, very clearly.
I'm very happy to hear that you, I feel like somewhere in the back of my head, I think we did know that you were a big horror movie, but like I knew that X was a horror movie. And then I started watching it. I went to see it and it's like, oh, they're like making a porn movie. It's like, Todd, is this okay? Like we've asked you to come on the porno slasher film. Is that okay? I mean, is that fine? Yeah.
It feels very horror to me.
It is horror. It is.
very horror, but and let's be honest, like the sex and violence go hand in hand in a lot of the slasher movies, so it feels very fitting that way as well.
Yeah,
and like, honestly, for being a horror movie that has a porno as the center, I think I've seen lots of other slashers that are a lot more graphic with their sex stuff than X is, honestly. So
this is so artful. As the director keeps saying within the movie,
yes,
like I'm trying to make art, I'm not just trying to make like a regular porno film. But like I am not certainly not an expert like Todd, but I feel like it's one of those things, right? Like the trope of people being punished for being like sexual in some way or like having some kind of awakening, I think is like a pretty well trod like horror trope.
Mm-hmm. Had you seen other, again, I don't know whether it's T or Ty, but have either of you seen any of his other work? What has he done? The Valley of Violence, The Sacrament, The Innkeepers, The House of the Devil.
Yeah, I would say The House of the Devil is probably his most well-regarded of his horror films. In the Valley of Violence is actually a Western, but it's also really good. But the others, Innkeeper's Sacrament, The Roost, those are all horror films. And he does like to do the thing where he... House of the Devil is another thing like this, where it has a very retro feel. Like he kind of tries to evoke kind of older horror films and kind of take that sort of atmosphere and then kind of tweak it a little bit. So if you are intrigued by X and want to check out some of his other stuff, I would definitely recommend House of the Devil as probably the best of those that he's done.
Okay. I didn't know a lot about this movie before I went into it. I believe, Eric, you and I were chatting because it was a Sean Fennessy did a podcast about X, and I was very intrigued.
Yeah, about a couple of movies he was recommending. Yeah,
yeah, and X was one of the big name ones. And I believe he interviewed, perhaps, the director as well. Mm-hmm. We can, I mean, I feel like we've given the little bit of the plot, but basically they are they're making a movie, specifically a pornographic film. They head to a rural Texas property, rent out one of the cabin on site and sort of do not let the owner, I believe his name is Howard. They do not let him know what they are doing. And then chaos ensues.
Yeah. And it's also the 70s. It's 79. It's so the 70s. There are no cell phones.
No cell phones. Yeah. Big picture thoughts. No, we won't spoil it yet. But Ariel, see it, skip it.
I think this is fun. Like, I think this is a movie certainly worth watching on any medium. If you can, you know, if you're comfortable doing so and you have the chance to see it in the theater, I would highly recommend it. It's super fun. It's like, it plays around with, like we talked a little bit about this in Scream where like, horror movies or certain kinds of any really genre movie has to like be aware of what has come before, and like you want to like create an homage to certain things while not like copying certain things. And I think this movie does a really good job of just feeling new and different, but also like very much referential to things that people will know. Certainly I think Todd will know a lot more references in this than I know.
Todd, what did you think?
Yeah, I think Ariel summed it up really well. I think the film manages to evoke that, especially Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That's like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre definitely has those vibes a lot, and just the general slashers of the late 70s, early 80s. But it also puts its own little spin on them and doesn't feel like it's copying. It feels like it's shouting them out. So yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great, and I would... If you're a horror movie fan, I think that you couldn't go wrong going to see it in the theater.
Yeah, totally agree. I feel like I always give this caveat. It's like, if you like horror, I think you'll like this one. You know, if you like Marvel movies, you should check out the Marvel movie that's coming out. I feel like it's like such a basic take I always give on here. But yeah, if you like are not a fan of horror movies, you probably will not like this movie. But if you do, it's quite fun. And I will say,
fair. It's like a mini trigger warning in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the reverence for horror movies. Like, I just have not, I don't mind them. I just like did not watch, I've not watched a ton of them. And so I still found it incredibly entertaining. Like, if they're like references, I haven't not seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre. If it's like evoking that movie, that means nothing to me. And I still thought it was thoroughly entertaining. So it's fun. All right, let's dive in. Spoiler filled. Mm-hmm. Pearl's a freak, I guess.
Pearl!
Oh my goodness, yeah. I think that's the kind way to see it, but yeah. Pearl.
Is that where we should start? Yeah. With Pearl?
It's going to be where we end, so yeah. You could be where you start.
Like the creepiest, Howard.
Like the creepiest cuddling sequence in film ever, Pearl in the bed with Maxine, that just,
So, man. I mean... I did the old IMDb during the movie because like who are some of these people? Yeah. And then it's like playing Mia Goth playing the role of Maxine Minx and Pearl. She played Pearl. Did we know that?
Yeah. See, no. Okay. So I didn't know that, and it wasn't until I guess the end of the movie that we'll get to, certainly like the post credits thing. that I realized that it may have been the same actress, because this weird thing happened where, now I have to say, just for the record, I do this kind of thing in like any genre of movie. It doesn't matter if it makes sense. I'm like, oh my God, is that her from the past? Like, where she's like, is she the same person? So like this time I was like, wait, did I happen to be right? Cause there's like a scene where she's like, oh, something about their connection. And
yeah,
it felt so weird. And I never picked up on the fact that she was actually being played by her. It was really bizarre in the best way.
Yeah, I had no idea going in. And the only thing is, I could tell, okay, probably they have a lot of old age makeup on who is playing Pearl. But I thought they're just trying to amp up. I thought they got an older actress and tried to make her look even older for it. I had no idea it was Mia Goth. And there is a scene where Pearl shows Maxine like a picture of herself younger. I'm like, okay, young Pearl looks a lot like Mia Goth. So that's kind of what they're going for there. But I still didn't clock until the very end. And that they were played by the same actress. Was something that she, so props to Mia Goth. She did a really good job of playing two very different characters.
Having to cuddle with herself, I guess, right?
Yeah, how'd they film this?
What a gift.
Yeah. No, I thought it was great when you like see it. It kind of almost makes me want to watch it again. Cause I'm like, oh, I want to see that. Like, you know the whole time that like, this is the same person playing both roles is really fun. Stephen Ur plays Howard. He's just known for playing like orcs in that Lord of the Rings. I don't know if
definitely has an orcish quality here to him.
I think that's like such perfect. They're like, we have to find someone to play this old man. Where should we go? Okay, we'll get an orc from Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit films. Yeah. His like IMDb is like he played Gorbag and Grishnok. Like, it's like incredible. It's so good.
Glad they gave him names.
But yeah, well, we've talked about the two, I guess, villains, antagonists of the movie, Pearl and Howard, a little bit. I think we'll get more into them later. But what do you think of the sort of the film crew? Any standouts from the film crew?
I love Jenny Ortega. Like, she is becoming, I can't remember. I think she was in something else besides Scream 5, which is the one that comes to mind to me that I really enjoyed her performance. And in this, I mean, I was sad when she had to go, spoiler, but she's doing so much great stuff in this genre. And I'm hoping anyway that we see more of her just across the board.
She is in Studio 666, which is the Dave Grohl
movie. Saw that. I'm trying to remember what
she's in a big year. She had Scream.
You saw that too.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't remember her. She played Sky Willow was the name of her character. I think she might've been one of the band that was killed off at the very beginning.
Because it had to be a small part. I would have remembered that.
Yeah, and then I don't know, she starred in The Fallout last year, but teen drama that I have not seen, and Guest Day as well, which is a Netflix movie with Jennifer Garner. But big horror movie year for her, with Studio 666, Scream, and then X. She's great. She's really great as Lorraine here.
Yeah, I love Brittany Snow, and I love Brittany Snow in this as Bobby Lynn. Brittany Snow was like one of my favorite parts of the movie. My favorite part of the movie actually, though, is like, okay, well, we have Brittany Snow and Kid Cudi in the film. We have to have them do music, right? So they had to have like a little musical sequence of Kid Cudi playing the guitar and Brittany Snow singing Landslide. And I laughed in the theater the first time I saw it. I was like, oh yeah, that's perfect. You have Brittany Snow, you got to have her sing. But no,
it's so good. I really enjoyed her a lot in
this. They got the rights to Landslide for this movie. I was quite surprised. They have Landslide.
They filmed the movie and then they're like, let's send it to try to get the rights for free. And then they just like, we're getting ready to slot something else in. But yeah, I mean, come on, it's a crowd pleaser. And to Todd's point a little bit, like to get it at that point, it's like the last thing you're expecting. And it's pretty funny.
It's right. I feel like Lorraine breaks the tension with something right after. She's just like, can I be in the movie? can I like film a scene? Or just like I don't know, make it a pretty like, serious
my vision,
movie
my vision.
Yes, yeah. That's the thing. So do we think that RJ is successful in creating an avant-garde porno film from his the scenes that we saw? I'm not quite sure if he quite hit avant-garde with the little bits of footage that we saw, but it could also all mean the cutting, so we
Right, right.
Well, the cutting or the
avant garde in pose. Right? Yes, what a cutting comment. One of the scenes that I love that I called, I think I called it like a "So You Think You Can Dance" contemporary number, was when like the older, I guess old Mia Goth is killing, I can't remember who, outside in front of the truck, and then everything turns red.
Yeah, RJ. She kills RJ, and
yeah, like, that was pretty awesome. I know he didn't. Yeah, he didn't direct it, but that felt pretty avant-garde.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a part of it, so
we could go through the deaths. We could rank the deaths here. Ooh, RJ's okay. The first to go, right? Correct. He is. What happens with RJ? He's trying to drive away. He's upset about the film, about Lorraine being in the film, and he just goes to drive away and Pearl is standing in front of the car or in front of the truck.
And then he tries to move out of the way, and she kind of comes onto him, and he rejects her, and Pearl doesn't take to rejection well, and then stabs him 23 times in the neck until he's basically, his head is almost decapitated as the blood is splattering on the headlights, and then she's bathed in red light and starts doing a dance to a little song that was written for the movie. Yeah.
My birthday is on the 23rd. Incredible.
Oh, wow. So many connections.
Yeah. Yeah, that part was brutal. I was like, oh, wow. Oh, that's what we're doing. Oh, okay.
So then, so RJ gets stabbed a bunch. Lorraine and Wayne notice that RJ's missing, so they go looking for him. And then Wayne gets killed by Pearl in the barn, I believe, right? Stab with a pitchfork.
Oh, that's right. That's the eye thing. Spoiler for people who don't like eye things.
Yeah.
Or content warning, I guess.
Yeah. Injury of the eye is one of the things that always makes me squeamish. So that was like, ugh. The other thing, like stepping on the nail right before that was also pretty bad. Someone who stepped on a nail once, it just like, since memory, it was bad.
Oh, God,
my favorite part about that scene is after Pearl stabs him, then she comes in and you just see her shadow as she shuffle waddles up towards him. And you see this little waddling shadow slowly approaching Wayne's dead body. Then she pokes him once with a pitchfork and he doesn't move. Then she starts like shoveling the hay on top of him to like hide the body.
She's very efficient.
It's such a weird little sequence, but I love it so much because it's so slightly off kilter.
So many scenes of just Pearl kind of walking. The scene when like... Bobby Lynn when Maxine wakes up while Pearl is in the bed, and then Bobby Lynn comes out and they just have Pearl like naked walk by her. She's like, what is happening? There's so many scenes of Pearl just like walking around naked. It's great.
Yeah. Pearl doesn't want to wear clothes. She's her own person. She wants to just be free.
She needs to be free. Howard won't give her what she wants. He can't. His heart couldn't take it. So.
Oh, God. That part is devastating when you realize why. Oh, my God.
So then that's where Howard goes to get, like, Jackson. He's like, oh, Pearl is missing. Mm. And they go out in the woods. And then he just shoots him. That's kind of like a... not as exciting of a death, I think, for Jackson as I would have liked. He just gets shot.
Yeah, I think, anticlimactic.
Yeah, Pearl's much better at the killing than Howard's deaths are all just shotgun related.
Boring. Yeah, her crimes tend to be like crimes of passion, right? So that makes sense. She's like, you rejected me, or you're in my way from the sex.
Yeah.
He's just like, he's boring.
Yeah.
The Bobby Lynn death is good. Bobby Lynn tries to cover up Pearl with a coat, and then when she tries to go back, Pearl stops her, and then she pushes her in the water and she gets eaten by an alligator.
Pearl is very like clean while you're cooking. Like, she's like, okay, I killed the body, now we gotta like put hay on it, or like alligator come, like we need to like get rid of this right away.
Can't have any evidence.
I did like that Bobby Lynn died from Chekhov's gator. Like, we saw the gator earlier in the film, and then like, okay, someone's got to die with the gator at some point in the film. And as soon as Bobby Lynn was standing on the dock, I'm like, okay, the gator's coming. The gator is coming right now. And like Pearl like slapping her. I'm like, ooh, man. Pearl.
Yeah, because to that point, they do such a good job of like faking you out with the tension earlier in the movie when Maxine is skinny dipping in the water and doesn't get eaten by the alligator, and it's really that scene even is really well done, and then to have it come back later, it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, the gator do a gator roll. It's great.
Yeah. I do love the scene where we first see the gator, just like the big overhead shot of Maxine just lazily swimming through the pond as the gator is zooming towards her. It's just like a great builder of tension.
And then it's a race. And then it's almost like you would rather the gator just get her outright than to like sit there and be like, oh no, oh no, now they're racing and she doesn't know it. Oh God, what's gonna happen? It's such good tension.
Yeah. Lorraine goes next. She just gets shot by Howard. I do the scene where she breaks out. She's trying to break out with the hatchet, and she like has her hand through, and then he just like hammers her hand. I think is like much even more disturbing than the scene where she actually dies.
Oh, 1,000%.
Her like broken, battered fingers. I'm no,
not Jenny Ortega.
How are you going to use those? She gets shot. I'm like, oh, that's kind of boring.
Not my Jenny. But we did see her survive a lot at the beginning of Scream, so yes. I did have a little bit of faith.
That's true. So she gets shot by Howard when she's trying to escape. She doesn't like quite die. She like startles Howard. So Howard dies from a heart attack because he got scared by the body that he shot.
The true tragedy.
So Howard's heart attack.
Poetic justice, I think, right there.
Yes, right.
And then the last death is Pearl getting run over by a truck. She tries to shoot Maxine. The backfires as she breaks her hip.
Yeah, and then Maxine backfires the truck onto Pearl. And at first it seemed like they just, you know, like she's gonna just drive away, but then she's like angry and she does the thing.
So which one, what's the best death? What's the best death? They're all I feel like they're mostly pretty memorable. Other than Howard just shooting people, they're all pretty memorable, I have to say.
I mean, Wayne's like, I'm not one to like vote for a, what is it? Like an eye death, but, that one is like, you know, it's coming and it's good tension and I feel like that one affected me for sure.
Yeah, because the first one, I guess RJ's death, you like are pretty sure that the way this is going is like, the old elderly couple who like are creepy are gonna kill everybody, but you don't really know. And then you do, and so then when the other ones are, you're like, okay, come on.
Yeah,
it's a death. Come on.
Do it.
I wish I could rank alligator one, but I feel like I like it more when they actually kill each other. But the alligator is fun.
Yeah, I think RJ's would be number one for me, just for the brutality. Like at that moment, Pearl just completely lost her mind and is just like screaming her head off as she's stabbing him 23 times, and then for her to get up and just dance in like the red light, music that's in her head, as because the diegetic music is a Fear the Reaper, but then the non-diegetic music is this tune called Headlights, which is written for the movie, which is her just kind of like dancing and to this much slower tune.
That's so sweet.
It was written for the movie. That's cool.
I believe so.
It's called art, people. That's right.
It was written by the people who do the scoring for the film.
Love that.
Oh my God. You know who executive produced this movie? Sam Levinson.
Brad Pitt.
Stop. Got his hands in everything, Sam Levinson, this guy.
Sam Levinson. Didn't he write? What did he write that we were talking about the other day? Right?
Euphoria. And he also. No, he did do something else.
Something. I think it was
Deepwater.
He wrote Deepwater. Yeah. God, what a guy. He's going to be like the super producer.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We come back. We'll chat through more of X. Okay, we are back. So we talked about all the deaths. What do we think, like, the villains work? I mean, this idea that, like, you know, these, like, I feel like the movie is a little bit about, you know, aging, like longing over your past. I don't know. I thought it worked really effectively. And I love, again, we talked about it before, but I love the idea of, like, casting Mia Goth to play both Maxine and Pearl, and your main villain, Howard's. He's in there, but Pearl is the real star of the show here. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was really good. That was fun.
Yeah. I've seen some criticism of it from a couple different places. I've seen a few people about in the PSR Discord as one, but also some friends I know from around here. And one mm-hmm. thing is they didn't like the motivation of it seeming like, oh, old people get horny so they kill people. They didn't like that as like the driving force yeah. of it, which I can understand. But I also feel like there was enough there even before the post-credit scene. I feel like there are enough little hints that, yeah, that's part of it, but it's not so much that the lack of sex has driven to them to this. It's that they were already unbalanced before, and that's just kind of like the trigger. Because yeah. even whenever Pearl is talking about like showing pictures of Howard whenever he's younger, she drops this line of like, back then he would do anything for me. And it's just kind of this weird little sinister comment for showing, mm-hmm. oh, look, it's me and my husband together. He would do anything for me. And it's just like, okay, that's a little odd. And I feel like there are a few little hints here and there that kind of show that what's driving to do this isn't necessarily just the whole Howard can't give her what she needs anymore. I think that shows it a little bit more than that. And then we have the whole post credits thing, which really shows like, yeah, even as a young girl, Pearl was not quite all there. So I understand the criticism, but I think there is a little bit, but so it might have been a little too subtle to catch on the first watch for mm-hmm. some of the details. And so that kind of falls on the film if they're trying to put these things in there, but it's
right.
If people don't pick up on it, then the film isn't doing enough to really sow the seeds, I think. Well, because I did, after you guys asked me to be on, I did go and see it again just so mm-hmm. I could take notes a little bit and right. refresh my memory. Cause I saw it like opening day mm-hmm. a few weeks ago. And so I picked up on stuff a little bit more than I definitely could see that they were seeing the things, but there's some things I didn't really notice until like the second viewing. So,
yeah, I think there's definitely, I agree that there's more, like it's more of an emotional reaction than just like, oh, you know, a lack of intimacy or whatever, however you want to put it, that like her wanting him to like, she wants to be made to feel a certain way. It's not just the sex. It's like, you know, she's cuddling with Maxine. She's telling him like, make me feel like I'm the only one. Like there's this longing, there's this like obsession that she seems to want from him almost, that is like very, to your point, Todd, like not normal is the wrong word, but not like healthy to the degree that she seems to be desiring it. And then when we see her then like younger, we get hints of how she used to be, it all clicks, like you said.
Yeah. And I think one of the big themes in the movie is that Maxine has the X factor, like the other thing that the X in the title Ooh. Can stand for, you know, mm-hmm. it's not just the X-ray, it's the X factor. And there's a scene whenever Maxine is filming the sex scene, like everyone's eyes are just glued to her, including Peeping Tom Pearl outside looking in, fantasizing as herself in the sex scene. But there's mm-hmm. these things, and even Pearl's like, she has something, she's special, that one. And then Pearl said, I used to be like that. And because she even tells mm-hmm. Maxine, you're gonna lose it, I used to have that, you're gonna lose it, you know. And so it's this idea that Pearl was like Maxine and everything, or Pearl was that one that people couldn't take their eyes off, but Pearl was the one that was magnetic and people were drawn to. She was that foxy car wreck that Bobby Lynn talks about. Yeah. And now she's gotten older. Now she doesn't have that anymore. People aren't drawn to her anymore. And so that frustration isn't necessarily a sexual thing, but like I said, the emotional thing, she is not getting the attention that she once got. She can't draw people to her like she once did. And that's part yeah. of where the frustration comes from, more than just like sexual stuff.
Yeah, I think that all makes like a ton of sense. I think all of that stuff certainly, I think, works and feels, you know, that critique that you're saying, that you were seeing, that it's a little bit like, wow, they're just really horny and they end up killing people. Like, I do feel like there's more to it than just that. I maybe wish there was a little bit, I guess maybe it is just a little too subtle, right? Because then once you start like roping in that, like, Howard is also doing all of this to basically, I guess, I don't know. It's really, does Pearl ever try to make any advance on any of the, yeah, I guess RJ, right? RJ.
Yeah.
She tries to make an advance on, but that's, I feel like the word advance also is like the lightest word I could use.
It's like, whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like Howard is keeping her at bay. Like, it's not just that he's trying to keep certain people out of his house, or like, I don't want that type of behavior on my property. It's like, I'm trying to prevent her from potentially doing what I think she's capable of doing.
Yeah. He even talks about whenever he kills, blanking on Cuddy's character's name.
Yeah. Jackson.
Jackson. Yeah. Like, whenever he kills Jackson, he's talked about the last Bohemians who stayed here were just like you, enticing my wife.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's because, like, I often like will read the Wikipedia, but, you know, just like, I can't take notes during the movie. And it talks about how, Howard, when he kills Jackson, it seems to imply that like he's in on the whole thing. But I guess like our reading of it is that like he's actually, this is like the best thing he can do to like prevent his wife from actually seeking what she needs elsewhere, right?
Yeah, or like, I mean, if he suspects that she might kill him anyway, or that she's capable of that, then maybe he's like better for me to do it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's also the whole body in the basement thing on here.
Oh,
so,
right. Okay. Poor body in the basement. Do you think that's also Mia Goth? The body?
Yeah. Right. What's the body in the basement? Lorraine gets trapped in the basement, but what is the implication that they
to show that they've done this before? But Todd, did that scream like torture to you? Because we got like entrails and like, you know,
yeah,
like, the body's hanging.
It's hanging, but it's also its pants are down, so the implications are pretty gross.
Every
level.
I was too busy looking at the entrails to remember about the pants.
Yeah, because it really, like, I believe like it pans down to show you the pants are on the ankles. Mm-hmm. So it's very much like, okay, the last Bohemian that came up and enticed her, she maybe had Howard grab them and keep them or whatever. Again, you know, feel icky talking about that. But
listen, Pearl gets what she wants. I don't know.
And it's interesting because, you know, we see like Jackson finds like the sunk like VW bug, I think, with like a Make Love Not War bumper sticker.
Yep.
And before that, right before Howard grabs him, Jackson's like up in the middle of the night, gets some milk from the refrigerator. There's a like missing persons picture on the milk carton, and it's kind of like a hippie looking guy, and so that could possibly be the Bohemian that they had. It could be the owner of the car.
Oh yeah, because wasn't there a car at some point we see underwater?
Yeah,
that's the Volkswagen that Jackson finds that's like submerged. Yeah, I mean, interestingly, I guess like if we thought that this movie was too subtle with like what are Pearl and Howard's like motivation here, apparently they just also filmed a prequel at the same time that they were filming this movie. Like TOS just filmed two movies, and there's a prequel called Pearl coming out at some point. The post credit scene would lead us to believe that it will be. Yeah, it's all the details are out. It's called Pearl. It's coming. They filmed it at the exact same time. So maybe we will learn more about Pearl. And
I do want to say the biggest jump scare in the film for me was when the post credits scene started, because I stayed till the end. I didn't know there's a post credit scene.
Oh my god!
Always stayed.
You hear me when you said post credits.
Well, because they actually like usually like as soon as the credits stop, they start the post credit scene.
Yes, 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 yes.
But they actually like there's 2 or 3 seconds of black screen and silence,
and then you see like an X on the screen.
Yeah, so I stand up, I start to leave, and like, oh, I guess there's not going to be anything.
Right.
And I was the only person who had stayed, and so the people who worked in the theater come in to start clean up, and so they were asking me what I thought of the film, and then it started, and all three of us like, whoa!
Oh, shit. That's awesome. I love that. That's like
the person cleaning was Pearl.
Yeah. She's like, what did you say about me?
What did you think of the movie?
What did you think of that prequel idea? That was my idea.
Could you take your eyes off me? Like, no.
That's
no
very way. That's very horror movie of like the three of you are like, oh, you think you're safe? You're having a conversation. Oh God, what is that?
But I'd say I am super excited for the prequel, because it looks like a completely different style of movie. It's not going to be the Texas Chainsaw Massacre thing. There's this whole vibe to it of Pearl, because like one of the big things is Pearl wanted to be a dancer. She was a dancer. And so the trailer has like these little like dream ballet type vibes to it. Like Pearl is having these weird hallucinations where she's dancing. It looks like a much stranger and weirder film. And strange and weird is very much in my wheelhouse. So I'm very much looking forward to Pearl because I loved X, and I'm very curious to see how the Pearl story shapes out.
So if you think Pearl is like at least 65 in the, like, I don't know.
Maybe I'm bad. Ageist.
I'm being, and it's set in 1979, and then you take like 40 years off of that.
Well, the film,
an interesting, like, time period for the movie.
The date is 1918 is when it's set. Like, it comes up on screen 1918. So that's like, you know, 61 years difference between.
I think that's before the Great War. That's before the Great War, is it?
No, it's right after the Great War. 1914
to 1918. I'm going to get it.
At least you called it the Great War today.
World War Zero.
So that's fun. I think that's.
Yeah, Todd, it wasn't until you called out that, because I had stayed for the, I think it was that I had seen on Run P, the app that tells me when to go to the bathroom if I need to enjoy the movie, which I sometimes just check because it tells you also if there are post-credit scenes. And it wasn't until you, so I'd seen that, I was like, wow, that's so cool. But I just thought it was like a fun extra that they had filmed, but not that it was a real film. And it wasn't until you called it on the Discord that I was like, oh wow, I didn't know it was a real thing that was going to come out. I just thought it was like, you know, kind of joke.
Yeah, I was like, I went home and I googled it immediately because Ty West, I could see him doing that because he has his first film, The Roost, kind of has this weird little meta thing. Mm-hmm. Like, they made a horror show, kind of like an Elvira, Mr. the Dark type thing, as like a framing device. It gets really meta halfway through the movie. So I could have seen just be like a kind of, oh yeah, we're going to do a prequel, ha ha ha, and then not really do it. But I Googled and saw, oh no, we actually filmed at the same time. And I was like, excellent.
It's so interesting. I feel like I don't know, maybe this has been done before of like, yeah, we filmed at the exact same time, but I feel like it's such an interesting, even if it's just like a marketing thing, to just be like, oh, there's another one. I mean, I feel like every Marvel is like, yeah, there's obviously another one coming, but I feel like in the day and age of like, yeah, we know like the blockbusters are coming, like we know the next movie is coming, but for this like kind of indie little horror film, just be like, hey, there's another whole movie coming. I don't know if it works if the movie is like bad, but the fact that the movie was like pretty fun, it's really I just think it's super interesting for them to be like, yeah, there's another whole movie coming, we filmed at the exact same time. It's really good, and you can only kind of do that if you also cast like Mia Goth's, I guess not, you could have had somebody else in there, but I mean, she's already on set, right?
She's doing great, and she already has the outfit from the porn movie that they're shooting within the movie. So they're like, let's use that and make her and put her in 1918 and make a whole movie around it.
So it's going to take place prior to the previous film. Explore how the cabin where the Massacre of X takes place was once used as a boarding house during the war. When do you think this comes out? How?
It's TBD, but like, TBD. If they already, I would think for sure, right, the latest by next year. But if it's already filmed, they could release it like at the end of the year. I don't know.
Well, he also, I'm
they could release it
sure
like in August, like, you know, like
I'm pretty sure he also said there's going to be a third movie. So
maybe he does like a Beyonce drop and he's just like, there it is.
What if this is our Russian Doll coverage has been, what if this, we just keep finding out he's just like at the end of Pearl, they're like, also we filmed a third movie during the filming of X.
Each death leads to like a new movie.
It's called Howard.
It's one seems not as good, but then they'll find a way to make it good, I guess. But it takes place in like 1844. Yeah. Crazy. And it's before the Great War.
You are correct. That is before the Great War. Good job.
Aaron, you and I are both fans of Dark, the TV show Dark. I don't know, Todd, if you're a fan of Dark, but my friend and I also have a joke when we like talking, when we'll suggest a TV show to each other. Like, yeah, but how many like divergent timelines does that show?
If it doesn't I have a minimum of 2 to 3.
If it doesn't have 3 timelines, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy it.
No, to that point, to those points, crazy. Yeah, for sure. It's such a cool thing to pull off, and to pull it off like, and have it feel this organic, you know, to just, oh, there's this other movie and it's not gross and it doesn't feel like money grabby. It feels like the story is totally lending itself to that and could even actually be good or even better, is like just really exciting and like fun as a viewer.
There's also the, like, there's sort of a reveal at the end, right? Where she's like, turns out to be the daughter of that, the preacher who's on the TV. And I,
that we've been seeing from the very beginning, like from the gas station at the very top of the movie.
I love exploring like this type of Christianity, like this, like the
televangelist,
televangelist. Yeah.
Evangelista.
I think
House of Evangelista.
I'm excited to explore if they go into any of that in Pearl as well. I would be excited.
Oh, that's right, because she's the daughter. Duh. So we're gonna.
Maxine is the daughter, so they won't do that in Pearl.
Oh, you're right. But Pearl's her.
Maybe
mother.
That's the trilogy.
So I figured that would probably be the third film. Right. I figured it would be having to follow Maxine since Howard and Pearl are both dead. And
the
now
third movie is called Evangelista.
Oh, did you know who played the alligator in this movie?
Oh my God, it's Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson played the alligator in this movie. Yeah.
She's so good. I love
she's
her.
She's so good. She's good in everything. Yeah.
Oh my.
To make that money. She's like, now that my Marvel tree has dried up, I need more.
All right. X, what did we miss? Anything else?
Like with the preacher, like one of my favorite things, like he mentions the daughter getting sucked into sin and vice the very first time that we see him. And then after Pearl blasts herself out the door, Maxine does her lines a few times, I'm not going to accept a life that I don't deserve. And it's intercut with the preacher saying the exact same thing on the TV. And also after the preacher kills Jackson, it cuts the preacher talking about how there are murders and sex fiends under our very noses where you least expect. And I just love like those little uses of the preacher through like the whole film to kind of like line up with things. I thought that was a really neat
thing. I mean, it's good. It's brilliant. Like even if it has no connection to like that being Maxine's dad, like it's just like, it's really good. I think like,
it's a character. It's like a character color thing.
Yeah, and because, you know, we talked about how the movie, there's a lot of, like, yeah, you know, people paying for the sins of, like, you know, explore, you know, like, these, like, sins, you know, is, like, some of what the movie touching on. To have just, like, the evangelical preacher, I said it correctly, playing on TV, like, sort of commenting on the whole thing, while, like, the people who have that on TV are also like deplorable. Like it's super interesting. It's really well done. And then to like the cherry on the sundae is like, oh, and it totally ties into the rest of the movie in not a way that feels hokey. And like, I'm excited for more
in a way that feels, for the way that feels really cool. I just want to call out, for a reason that will not become apparent until whatever, the scene where Howard and, Pearl have sex, and for some people it's like, oh my God, that's way too much, and like they go there because it's not the kind of thing, like you think that they're teasing this thing out and that something is going to prevent it, and then you're watching it happening and you're like, oh my God, now we're just in this. But the thing that makes it funny and interesting is that Maxine is under the bed, and then they start playing like what felt very like the last scene of Midsommar to me, like that very famous scene that I will not spoil.
Pretty
and
sure,
it's just, like, a very like chanty music and like very creepy. I'm like, oh God, what is happening? What is happening?
This I think is our so friend unsettling. Jank in the said best sex scene since Midsommar.
Oh my God, see, there you go. We're same what page. He said.
Sorry, Jank, if you didn't want to be outed as the ex viewer, apologies in advance. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. So that was very well done, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't know. Maybe, you know, I have not watched again. I have like big blind spots when it comes to my horror movie knowledge. 106 minutes. Perfect length. Is that typical? I feel like horror movies are
pretty short. A lot of horror movies are pretty short. I mean, big budget ones tend to be a little bit longer, I think, but no, like the 90 minutes is a pretty standard runtime for a lot of horror movies. You'll get some longer ones, but that's pretty standard to have them between 90, 110 minutes.
Sonic was 2 hours. Sonic 2. All I have to say to that is absolutely not. And this movie is doing it right. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. And I'd like to call it, I think there's some really interesting like directorial flourishes throughout. Mm-hmm. Like there's a scene where whenever Maxine first meets Pearl and she's having the lemonade in the kitchen. Meanwhile, they're filming the lemonade porn scene at the same time. It kind of cuts between the two of those. I think that's like a really interesting thing. During the landslide song, there's a split screen business going on that kind of cuts back and forth between split screen of the people listening to the song, but then cuts back to Pearl, like putting on the makeup, and kind of goes back and forth between those. And there's lots of these weird little triple cuts, real like it will cut from current scene to like the next scene, then back to this scene, and go, like there's like six or seven of them, I think. One, two, three, four, five. There's six of them. There's like six different times it happens, and there's not necessarily a rhyme or reason to why it does or doesn't happen. Just this really weird thing that I couldn't help like noticing, that it just kind of like flitters back and forth between those.
It's really cool, and what I love about that specifically is, to your point, they do it so many times, and I don't mean that to sound like it's too many times, but after the first few times, you understand what's happening, you understand what you're watching, and it's like teaching you the language of like that mechanism in the movie, and it's like it's really effective, like you said.
It becomes the style of that particular movie. It's really good. Yeah.
And one other thing I want to touch on is, because we kind of like briefly talked about the porno actor cast, but I think like for a horror movie, like one of the things that really makes a really good horror movie is having characters that you can care about to a certain degree. I mean, their horror movies are like, okay, I just want all these characters to die immediately. Please.
They're taking too long.
And this movie does, it's over an hour before the first death occurs. You know, you're well over an hour into the film before RJ finally dies. So if you don't have like really compelling, interesting characters to focus on for that hour, the movie is just a slog. But the main characters are, all of them in their own way, are very interesting characters that some of them kind of fit like the horror movie things, but all of them are a little different. Like Wayne is a much more interesting character than I ever would have expected Wayne to be from the trailers. Bobby Lynn's a much more interesting character. Maxine's a much more interesting character. I think the strength of this film really isn't necessarily the horror elements, but I think like developing these really interesting characters who you don't mind spending that hour with waiting for the blood to start flowing. And I just really wanted to shout that out, because I think some of the best horror movies do that. And and Ty West does like to do that little bit of a slow burn type thing. Like it takes a little while before you get to the real action. And then if action hits, then it's like pretty nonstop. But giving you those things to be able to make it worthwhile to get to that point is a really important factor in the film, I think.
Yeah, I think all of the female lead, like the whole, every female in the crew is really, well, I guess I think Wayne might be my least, he's the least interesting, maybe RJ. But I think that they're still strong characters. Like, I think that's I'm the least interested in Wayne probably. And it's still like, I'm, invested in, his story in the movie, I think is a testament to that crew and them being the crew that gets killed off. Yeah,
maybe the other film is going to be the story of Wayne's topless car wash that the IRS kept from coming.
Oh, true. God. Yeah. He just died in his underwear. Yeah. R.I.P. Wayne.
All right. Anything else?
I think we can X-card ourselves here.
All right. Remove ourselves. I mean, yeah, pretty fun. I'll probably watch it again at some point.
For sure. I'd love to watch this, like on a binge, or if, a friend of mine wants to like check in the theaters, I wouldn't mind seeing it again at all.
Yeah. Todd, thanks so much for coming on, giving us your horror movie expertise. This is great.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a blast. I've been trying to think of a movie to suggest, and I thought about X. I'm like, I don't know if Errol and Grace are going to cover X. I won't say it. Then Grace reached out. So do you want to cover X? I'm like, okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're really happy. We were trying to, it was always like a back of the mind thing of like what would be, and then some people, like suggest things and other people don't, and for horror, for once this lined up and it was like horror, absolutely. I think he would be interested.
Welcome back. Todd, what are you up to? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Librarian Todd, because Todd Librarian is too many characters. You can also find me every week on One Indescribable Podcast, a podcast where Adam H., TV Lindy, and I are going through the late great CW series Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Just yesterday dropped, when we're recording, just yesterday dropped our season 2 finale coverage with the great Jess Sterling. So it was our longest episode. Podcast yet, well over 3.5 hours, which is usually not that long.
Wow.
So, yeah, we uh we talked about a lot.
1 hour for each of you, or I guess no, because no, just
not
you
quite,
because
there are four of us.
Right.
But yeah, and you can also.
It was weird. Jess didn't speak at all during the podcast. Yeah. Jess, she didn't speak at all. It's so weird.
Featuring Jess, we promise she's here.
Yeah, and you can also find out more about that at our Twitter, which is 1CXG Podcast. It's ONECXG Podcast. Also, recently, I have begun to be part of a cast for a Wheel of Time Dungeons and Dragons based the actual play called Threads in the Pattern over on twitch.tv/DMPhilly. So if you're a fan of Wheel of Time, if you're a fan of D&D, if you're a fan of DMPhilly, we're going to try to do at least twice a month on Sundays. So head over there and see if you can find it either on the VOD or possibly on Philly's YouTube channel.
Sounds good. Ariel, what about you?
Let's see. We just finished up a little bit ago the Dropout coverage of episodes, and there was a bonus episode that we got to talk a little bit more about, like, the real life events of Elizabeth Holmes and all the Theranos stuff. We had Lindsay Wilson on to talk about that. That was super fun. And then also we have been releasing on the Binge Show Recaps feed the season one coverage of Russian Doll. Been super excited about that. That is with Grace and Marissa and myself, and I'm really excited to see where season two goes, because I just watched the trailer finally and I'm feeling good about it. I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't want to get my hopes up too high. I think that's it for me. I am on Twitter at that other Ariel, and I am on Letterboxd at AR_F as well. F as in Frank.
Todd, you're on Letterboxd, right?
Yes, and I believe that is etoad75, I was believe is what my handle is.
I'll do my plugs if you need that's it. Winning Time, Sunday nights on HBO, covering that with Jason Reed, Russian Doll coverage, over on Rob as a Podcast, covering sports every other week with the Off Speed Podcast, and more. I'm playing some D&D on twitch.tv/DMPhilly as well, either in space or as a little raccoon, so check that out. And everything else I'm doing, you can check it out on my Twitter at Hi From Grace. We will be back later this week with some more post-show recaps, either coverage. Until then, bye-bye.